May 1st, 2013, it's Watt from Pedro Show.
Delighted to be back in the United States, my hunting ground of 35 years, the country where I had my innings in the social and economic struggle, and where I decided to devote myself to the presentation of anarchism, a social philosophy which aims at the emancipation, economic, social, political, and spiritual, of the human race.
What is your opinion of Italy?
Beautiful country minus Mussolini.
Mr. Oldman, should the government here object to your speeches of anarchism, would you change them or leave the country?
I will leave the country rather than deny my ideas. I prefer to stick to my gun.
Thank you.
Watford Pedro Show. Just back from New York City. We started to... Oh, yeah. First off, happy May Day. Started the show off with John Coltrane doing Like Sunny, alternate version, take two, incomplete. Maybe some clam, or Mr. Coltrane says they weren't... Sounded like they weren't playing the same thing, I think is what he says. Then we heard Emma Goldman speaking a little for herself in 1934. And after that, Dream E by Sawako. And I'm at the Love Grotto with Brother Matt. He was detained by L.A. Dodger commitment that he had forgot about. But I'm not alone. It's not a man alone show here at my pad, Pedro. I got Chris Lard with me. Thank you. Welcome aboard.
Oh, thank you.
You've, people have heard his music before. I've played a lot of it. And stuff on his label he's put out that I've got to be a part of. Actually, I've got to be a part of some of his stuff, too. We'll hear a little later. But welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks so much. Thanks for, man.
You came over from Long Beach, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so you didn't have to, you didn't have much of a hell ride.
Yeah, no, I just came over the 110.
Chris, really, 110, what'd you do then? Because the 110 ain't in Long Beach. It took a road to get over.
I came from Carson, actually.
Took Carson over to 110. Yep. All right. So you went by the turd farm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, going way back, I don't know how early it is, but what's your first musical thing that you can recall?
You know, I was playing clarinet.
So you were a kid?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I started playing clarinet. I was terrible, no good at it.
What? How'd that happen? It was in school?
It was in school, yeah, elementary school, and it was sort of just like, you know, kind of
there was a music class?
Yeah. People,
this is the days when there was music classes at school.
That's right, yeah, it was sort of like an option, you know, it was like, hey, you want to, like, if you're interested in this, come check it out. So
you know, they've scissored a lot of that stuff.
I know it.
And people like Dolphy and Mingus, people came out of the public schools.
That's right, yeah. So that was kind of where I jumped in, and I even did a thing where I, you know, I was like playing in like, you know, in a terrible orchestra.
So it was like a elective or something.
That's right.
So you want to do something artistic, and you took music, and they said what instrument you want.
Yeah.
Relinquish stick.
Yeah. So I picked clarinet. And
why?
I just didn't understand. I don't, you know, it was just...
What about in the house before that? Were you hearing records?
Oh, man. Yeah, my dad is a big... My dad's got such weird musical taste. Like, growing up, I remember listening to, like, the heavy metal soundtrack for the cartoon, that movie. You remember that? From, like, 77?
You mean like a...
That heavy metal cartoon.
Like France animation?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, like, all animated. And that had a weird soundtrack. It was, like, Devo, Black Sabbath,
wow.
Cheap Trick, Nazareth, yeah. Stevie Nicks. Like,
Stevie Nicks.
You know what I mean? This weird combination, right? So I was listening to that. And then my mom was always listening to Crosby, Stills, Nash, Joni Mitchell, Police, you know, around the house, you know.
So there's a lot of music in the pad.
Yeah.
But none of those cats are clarinet players.
You know what? I think the thing is, you know, eventually I figured out, I never took to the instrument, really. And I think it was just a desire to be involved with music. And eventually I jumped over to guitar.
Enough of that in school. On your own, you went to the guitar.
Yeah. I think the thing was, one of the reasons I never stuck, it just never, the clarinet never meant anything because I didn't understand how music worked, you know. It was just a melodic instrument. So I was like, well, how do you write a song? It wasn't part of the folk tradition, so I didn't grow up listening. I mean, my grandfather listened to a lot of Benny Goodman. So there was a little bit, right? But... And I think maybe he kind of was into the fact that I was trying clarinet because he was a Benny Goodman and, like, Lionel Hampton fan. Like, that was the era that he came up with. Yeah.
There's a movie in Pedro with it. I think that's where they find Lionel Hampton. He's working in a kitchen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's the Gene Krupa story.
Yeah.
Where Steve Allen is like Gene Krupa.
Totally.
But everybody else is kind of themselves.
Right, right.
They go to go playing Catalina or something.
Classic.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you go to guitar. What'd you do, buy a pawn shop guitar?
Yeah, my... there was a place that was like right off of right off of one of those diagonals, like right off of Carson and like Lakewood Boulevard, and it was like a music tutoring spot. And there was a guy named Keith, I think, that I was taking clarinet lessons from. Well, there was another dude there named Marty, and he gave the guitar lessons, right? So I grabbed I grabbed this like really hilarious like kind of strap copy with like lightning bolts on it, and yeah, right, you know, it's like, oh man, this is, you know, this is where it's at. You
know, it's got lightning bolts.
Yeah, come on. So I grabbed that, and then crazy thing is, you know, I took lessons for like a year, and it started slowly making sense to me, just the building blocks of music, and then my teacher, this guy Marty Austin, turns out he was like a huge like prog fusion freak, right? Yeah. So at one point, I think I told him like, hey, my mom's not going to pay for lessons anymore, and he goes like, all right, like let me give you, this is the stuff. So he's like, Mahavishnu, right? He's like,
I got to see that.
Is that right?
At the Long Beach Arena.
No kidding.
They had a curtain, so it was smaller, but yeah.
Yeah.
And it was the one with those guys, you know, Jan Hammer and...
Yeah,
Jan
yeah.
Goodman, Jerry Goodman, Rick Laird.
Billy Cobham.
Billy Cobham.
Yeah.
Rick Laird on the bass, and of course John McLaughlin sure. on double neck.
Of course, yeah. 12-string like the SG fuzz, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, through fuzz tone.
Yeah.
Playing lead guitar through a 12-string on electric. But it was pretty... It was different than the other prog, I gotta tell you.
Yeah.
There was something about it that was very emotional and visceral, where I didn't get that with the Return to Forever or something.
Sure, yeah, yeah. I never got into Return to Forever, but when Marty kind of put me on, he was like, okay, Mahavishnu, Alan Holdsworth.
Oh yeah.
You know, he's like, start checking out some of this weird like Yes stuff, the later period, like mid period, like Steve Howe. He's like, you gotta check out like Tempest Fugit, some of these tunes like off of like Drama and like Tormato, and he's Going for the One and some weird records, because I was into Fragile when I was a kid. I actually saw Yes at the Forum when they were on that, like,
I saw them only once. I fell asleep.
Is there,
there was a lot of keyboard. The guy could play guitar. I'm not saying, and the bass. I found out later it was, dude, a bass player's band actually.
That's right. And Squire's a huge Coltrane.
Is he?
Freak.
Wow.
I
wouldn't have guessed that.
He had this weird thing where, you know, he played through that Rickenbacker, and he had like two outs, and one would go through a bass amp, one would go through a guitar amp, yeah. So that's how he got that snarly...
And with a pick.
Yeah.
The roundabout bass line is so huge.
Dude, the bass sounds on some of those old records are phenomenal, man.
Tell me something. We're going to play some of your music here, and for some reason I thought this was early stuff for you because it was a band and not your name.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's something called Wide Streets.
Wide Streets. So this is a group... So
this
like
is way down the, we'll go back to your old
yeah,
story.
Yeah, but. Yeah, yeah. But so yeah, like Wide Streets is that was a group that was kind of forming, you know, after we did that 7-inch together with Rare Grooves,
yeah,
that we called you in on, and then yeah, you came down.
Compound and
that's right.
Signal Hill.
Same cat. So it's like Danny and Tabor from Widow Babies and Rare Grooves. They had this other cat, Jet, that they met, and they were like, you know, we got this new thing, we want to try this out. We want you to produce it and help us put it together. So they wrote a lot of these tunes, and then I came in with arrangement ideas, started playing some guitar, brought in a couple other cats, like this guy Philip Glenn playing violin, and Anthony Shattuck playing upright bass, wow, and Andrew Pompey. A lot of cats were involved in the Psychic Temple stuff coming in,
sure,
but this totally different style of stuff, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, because these young guys brought it.
That's
they,
right.
Where they were the germ.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, let's listen to it.
The train home from the Show me.
We started off there with Chris and his community.
Yeah.
We have two young men, bring him a prod. She brings on board his people, and they commiserate to make this wide streets. A tune called Sometimes We Walk. And after that, we had the Hysterical Injury with Bitches Balls. Petra Hayden with God's Lonely Man, her new album. A cappella movie soundtrack.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
She did that with The Who, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That was never meant to be an album. I just asked her to do that. I gave her an 8-track cassette.
Yeah.
I put it on track A. I said, now you sing along. She never heard it, right?
Yeah.
She grew up with jazz. And
right, right.
So she just sang along to it. Yeah. And Pete took her to Townsend, took her to Chow.
No kidding.
He said Roger hated it.
Wow.
Then we heard Jelly Pop Smiles by Guided by Voices. Bob Pollard, you know, with his monthly release.
Right.
This guy's prolific.
I know.
Great, great stuff. Weird Circles by Taramellos. They got a new album. Taramellos out of Sacktown, but on the road right now on tour. Then No Mercy. Did you remember them?
No.
They're from the late 70s in San Francisco.
Okay.
Just a drummer and a singer.
Oh.
A tune called Fashion Chant. And finally, Wharton Tears Ensemble with the Randomness of Insects. Wharton Tears, I got to record. He's got a studio. I can't remember the name, but it's in Manhattan, and I got to record with Bob Quine and his band.
No kidding.
Yeah. Everybody said, watch out, the dude's mean.
Yeah.
But he turned out to be a sweetheart, man. He's beautiful, and I love his playing, you know, on the Voidoid.
You know, there's a cat I was thinking on the way. For years, man, I've been meaning to ask you, a cat that you played with that is one of my all-timers, man, Chris Whitley.
Oh, yeah.
You played on that Terra Incognita record,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I did it up in Oxnard.
Yeah, yeah.
And I drove up there.
Dude, tell me about that.
Dougie Baum was the drummer.
Yeah, dude, I've always loved his playing.
Dougie's the one I made the 4x4 with.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was playing Yuka Honda. Result of that was them getting married.
Amazing.
Dougie was the ex-husband. It was his studio that he has with Ivan Julian, which was the other guitar man in Voidoids with Bob Quine. So it's all connected.
Yeah, yeah. Comes back together.
Chris was beautiful, man. He could sing, he could play. I think a Texan guy who knew blues knew it. It was in him.
Yeah.
He was just, cancer got him or something.
Yeah.
Too young, way too young.
Dude, I bought that record.
He's
brand
beautiful,
new, man.
Man.
There's some about
he
his
had a
music.
Bad story, like they wanted to make him Mersch.
Right, and with that first record, that Living with the Law record. Very like adult contemporary, a lot of synthesizers and shit. And then the next record, he comes out with that Den of Ecstasy, like crazy aggressive.
But that's what he wanted to do.
Alienated all of those OG fans, which I thought was like, dude, you got to have like balls to do that.
Church
right?
bells.
And, I mean, and then I just loved it. Like it seemed like everything after that, he just followed his heart. Like he was just like, I'm going to do this. I wanted to do that.
Yeah. I mean, he had a lot of courage. There's a lot of cats, you know, what the rock and roller coaster or whatever, they want to take the ride and tie on the puppet screens, cry about it later.
Yeah, yeah.
And Chris said, no, I want to, you know, sing my song.
Yeah.
Great, great cat. Thanks for bringing him up. I got to play something from him. I also got to, he played slide guitar on a Blue Oyster Cult song I did. Yeah, with the two Bouchard brothers, the drummer and the bass. Dominance and Submission. Oh, Secret Treaties.
Classic, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That's old school BOC.
Yeah, old school BOC. Man, thanks for bringing him up. People, check out Chris Whitley's music if you can. I'll play more on the show. I have played a lot of his stuff. He was just something else. And the most gentle, kind man. Really good cat. Deep cat. Dougie, too.
Yeah, always a big fan of his.
Wow. Look, what about this Starry King Hears Laughter 1?
Okay, so this is a track from the record that's coming out in July of this year, from the new Psychic Temple record. This is a tune that I wrote, and I sort of had it, you know, I just had this melody. I heard, as I was writing it, I could hear Chris Tyner playing trumpet on it. And,
so you kind of wrote it for him?
Sort of, yeah. There's certain melodies, man, I just hear certain people playing.
Yeah.
You know, certain parts, like, as, like, I'm writing it, like, they inhabit it.
Like
you know
a
what
playwright
I mean?
With a movie. I want this guy
totally.
To act it.
That's right. I remember, this quote from Robert Altman, and he said something like, you know, I don't have to, or the actor like asked him for, you know, like, give me some direction. He goes, well, I cast you for that part, so that's it.
Right.
That's you.
That's a geo.
That's, you know, and so like, that's how I kind of approach a lot of music too. Yeah. It's like, well, I want you, like, God. I can hear you, I'm feeling you, and I'm so sensitive to like each musician that I'm not going to try to put them in a situation that wouldn't bear fruit for them. You know what I mean?
Giving them a launch pad.
Yeah, like, because
you're not giving them like the paint by number.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I remember I did this one thing with like Lynn Johnston a long time ago.
Yeah, Saxman.
Yeah, where I had him. I had him doing, and you know, I went to his house and recorded him, and it was for this kind of weird, like, these old like public domain tunes that like I kind of rearranged, and I had him do these crazy like multi-layered parts. And I remember afterward he was like, I've never done anything like that.
Well, that's the gift you gave him.
You know? And so it was, that felt good.
Let's listen.
All right.
Thank you. confidence curls like some familiar cat. Only this time it wasn't a dream. You drape your teeth on the chair that
Watt from Pedro Show. You just heard the Puzzle Panthers doing Now I Hear Laughter. The Laughter is a Germs cover. Mike D singing. Or is Mike D on the drum? Yeah. I think Dave Markey's on the drums and Kay on bass, Thirst on guitar. Deer Hunter before that, new album. Tune called Neon Junkyard. Ahead of that, Glimpse Trio. You know these cats? No. Bay Area?
Uh-uh.
Kind of broad. They're okay. On tour now. A tune called I Owe You. The Paranoid Critical Revolution, Crash and Burn. You hear them? They're East Coast. They're New York City.
I haven't.
Reg Bloor, she runs Glenn Renka's.
Oh, okay.
His wife did.
Yeah, yeah.
Or he's the husband. I correct myself. And ahead of that was Us Free, Family Room. Hey, Evan. Got to see him in New York City yesterday, or day before yesterday. And then we start off with the Starry King. Here's Laughter One. There's more than one?
No, that's just it. That's okay. It. Yeah. You know, and that tune's kind of about Bill Evans. It's sort of this conflation of, like, you know, William Blake, some of his.
Sure.
So, like, his whole.
The painter and
poet. Yeah, yeah, his whole thing.
Maybe
with
the
this,
first hippie 300 years ago.
Right.
Or
dude, his stuff looks so much like comic book panels, it's crazy, right? But, I mean, he had this character of Urizen, you know? And so I always. So, in this, the Starry King, that's one of Urizen's other names, is the Starry King.
Alter ego.
So, I had this thing, I heard this interview with Paul Motion.
Oh, man.
And he said.
A good friend of Pat.
Is that right?
Yeah, he passed away from cancer.
Yeah, man.
She made a whole album with him.
Oh, no kidding.
I
played
a bunch
right.
on the show.
That's right.
Family Standards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I saw him in New York at the Village Vanguard, like, in February of the year that he passed away. I was out there doing a Psychic Temple gig, and all the cats had, we'd flown out. Tabor was there. We all went out, and I said, guys, Paul Motion's playing Village Vanguard. Like, we gotta go. And we went, and it was like, there was some transference there.
Oh,
like,
man.
I remember the thing that just killed me about the whole thing is, like, he was playing with his group that had, like, I want to say, did he have two bassists that night? And then that guy on piano and a dude on sax. And I remember at one point, he didn't play the kick drum for, like, 20 minutes. And when he did, it, like, knocked everybody off their chair. It killed me, man. Like,
the bomb.
Yeah, like, you know, everybody's so, like, it's almost like that thing in us, like, where we want to, like, show everybody what we could do all the time.
Right.
And he was so far past that.
Yeah,
he's like, I don't care. And then, just that he took, like, this orchestral approach, like, beautiful brushwork.
Yeah.
And then eventually, boom, one kick drum hit, and it was, like, 1,000 decibels. Dude, it was like... I fell off my chair. It came out of nowhere, you know, because he pulled you in.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Which is, you know, good expression is always like that: a poem, a movie, a book, a tune.
Yeah,
it's about the fabric connected. Look, we're at the end of the first hour of the May Day 2013 Watt Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour two. May 1st, 2013. It's the second hour of the Watt Pedro Show. Watt for Pedro show here with Chris Larb. May Day special show here. Start off second hour with Find It from Solo Musica. Happy Cycling, Bad Day from Peel Session, Board of Canada. I guess they got a new album. Rocket from the Tombs, which was kind of proto Ubu, right, out of Cleveland, with I Sell Soul. Ava Mendoza and Nick Tamburo with 2 Second Shapeshift. Are you familiar?
No.
Buddies of Evan and Devin and Nels.
Okay.
She's Bay Area guitarist. Incredible. Yeah. I got to be at a gig. Actually, I was jamming with her for a benefit for something. But she's amazing. And then finally, the world premiere of Till I Die by Chris Larb. And this is from the brand new stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But we want to go back to the story of the... You get into music, you've got a guitar with lightning bolts.
Yeah.
The man, I mean, Ma can't... She can go springboard for lessons anymore.
Right.
So Marty here gives you the fundamental,
yeah,
the lowdown.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it's funny, man, because he... So he gives me, you know, he's like Ma Vishnu, Holdsworth, Crimson, you know, like...
Yep.
Yep.
On the stool.
Yeah.
You get
a
stool?
Yep.
No. You did?
Yeah. I play a lot sitting down, actually. I remember hearing something about that where, like, Greg Lake told Fripp he looked like a mushroom or something. Like,
right. You know, he's like, the first thing.
Yeah.
He's like, I think they grew up together, though.
Is that right?
They knew each other a long time. But, which is so trippy. I found that out way later.
Yeah.
I had a bootleg in the old days, though. And somebody in the crowd between tunes, because he had a mic, even though he didn't sing, he would, like, spiel, right?
Right.
Somebody yelled out Boogie. And he got pissed. He goes up to the mic. He's, we do not.
Classic.
Which I heard was the real pronunciation of Bougie Boy.
Is that right?
From the Devo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They just didn't ran out of G's, so they had to use a J, but nobody ever said Bougie Boy.
Yeah, yeah.
I always thought it was short for bourgeois.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
No, it was
funny.
Boogie.
That's funny.
Because, you know, they're kind of older guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
yeah, so
gives you the thing.
Yeah, he gives me all that stuff, and then I ended up going out, and there used to be a record store right down the street from my dad's house, and I walked over there, and I picked up an Alan Holdsworth tape of Metal Fatigue, and I came back to my dad's house, and I was like, I don't know, 14, 15,
yeah,
somewhere around there. I put it in this, like, big old component stereo thing my dad gave me, and I listened, and I had this moment, man. It was like this Paul on the Road to Damascus, you know, type of situation where
Saul.
I said... Yes, Saul. That's right. He was Saul at that point, right?
Off, right?
So, like, I had this whole thing where I was just like, I thought either, like, I kind of... After I listened to Holdsworth, I was like, well, I never heard anybody play guitar like that. I mean, so fluid. Like, he's like that Coltrane. He wanted to do Coltrane
was
on
guitar. Was he doing a synth yet on that album?
Not on that record.
It was, you know, all, he got into that later.
Yeah. It was all electric guitar. Uh-huh. And it was just these, like...
Actually,
unbelievable.
He might be on some Dan records. Maybe Katie lied.
What?
He might. Derringer, too, I think.
That's right. Rick Derringer is on that stuff. Yeah.
Or maybe Holdsworth or Barry Carlton.
Yeah.
I mixed my names up. These guys, incredible musicians.
Yeah, yeah.
Did he have a band called Fire Merchants with Chester Thompson?
You know what? That was that.
I think that was like Bogart's in Long Beach. And I was on the bill.
No kidding. Dude, Chester Thompson.
Because the Holdsworth name is ringing bells in my head. Man.
Yeah. But basically, I had this moment where I was like, either I could quit this guitar thing, because I'm never gonna be as good as this guy.
Oh, so it's intimidating.
Or,
yeah.
And this is the path that I went. I said, or I could do what he did, and he found his own voice, right? So that was like my moment where I was like, okay, either quit, because you'll never be that good, you'll never be that fast.
Quit copying.
Yes.
Or go for your own.
Or just make my own thing, and that's the path I tried to go down.
Righteous.
You know.
At the end of the day, that adds to the big vocabulary that we're all in.
Yeah.
What Coltrane called the reservoir.
Yeah. That's it, man. I mean, but that was
what was the name of the album?
Seminal for me. But Metal Fatigue.
Metal Fatigue.
Yeah.
And he was tired of the metal.
Yeah.
He heard that heavy metal soundtrack.
And he was kind of making fun of it a little bit. In the very first track, he's doing these, like, weird, like, harmonic, like, distorted, you know, things. And then it kind of, like, then it gets all into his kind of sound, you know. But I think for me, it was really helpful because I was coming out of, like, in high school, I was playing in, like, gospel choir for Jordan. I went to, you know, in North Long Beach.
I know Jordan.
So I was playing in gospel choir there.
School.
It was rough, man, for sure.
So they were, we played them.
Yeah.
Green League.
Yeah, totally, right? Yeah. So I was playing in the gospel choir there, and we ended up playing
singing
like
too?
No, just playing guitar.
Oh, playing guitar.
But we had a band. We had a good band.
Okay.
And so I was playing electric guitar in the gospel choir. We played on like BET. You know what I mean? It was like some kind of cool stuff happening. And then I was playing on a lot of like gangster rap songs for like high school kids. They would do sessions. They're like, oh, come out and play guitar on my track or whatever. And so I did one of these types of sessions.
Oh, so you knew you're recording stuff.
Well, I was just kind of like doing a session thing,
yeah,
you know?
Side mouse.
Yeah, basically. So,
because at this point, you still don't have a band.
No. I didn't even know what I was doing, you know?
Just doing
I'm
your
just
own
playing.
Records.
Yeah.
And then with these kids in school.
But see, then the thing is, I did this session for this group out in like Inglewood when I was like 16, 17. And the guy who was like the quote-unquote producer, he was like, oh, man, I was just doing harmonics and some silly melody and stuff. This guy goes, look, he goes, I want you to write more stuff for this group. And he gave me a 4-track.
Whoa.
Like as payment, kind of. And he's like, just
you
put your ideas.
Yourself.
And that after that, it was over, man. Like after that, I broke the clarinet back out. I started doing acoustic guitar stuff. My brother had a drum set, so I'd like go and play drums. I was like listening to like Genesis and stuff, so I'd like try to like, oh, I'm gonna try to do this like rhythm like Phil Collins, and then I'll record like acoustic guitar and then clarinet.
Just start like, layering up like Paul. Yes. That's Paul.
Totally, totally.
What about this Daughter of Ursa Major?
Yeah, man. That was
the tune we're going to hear next.
Yeah, that was the tune I wrote for my
wife. I know
we're
jumping ahead again.
No, that's all right.
But we'll get back to the old story.
Yeah, I wrote that tune for my wife and her sister. They were born in Pedro.
Ursa's Bear.
That's right.
It's also the name of the Big Dipper.
That's right. That's they called their dad the Bear.
Oh, okay.
And it's funny, man, because they're Pedro girls.
Okay.
Their grandpa still lives, like, what, over by the Can-Can bar? You know where that spot
is?
Sure,
on Pacific.
Yeah. Was first in Pacific, right?
Yeah. D-Boom lived near there, Santa Cruz.
That's kind of a little rough
there's some
spot.
Rough. Yeah.
I went to that. The guy, there's a guy who I don't know if he owns the Can Can or what, but he was friends with my wife's grandpa, and like there was a De La Hoya fight on one time, and he was like, they just call him compadre. Like everybody just is like, oh, that's compadre. And he wears like a white suit all the time,
yeah.
And he's like, come. So I go into like the back of the Can-Can bar, and we're like watching the De La Hoya fight on like a little tiny TV, and he's like bringing me like shrimp ceviche. I was like, dude, I'm in another world right now. But
well, let's hear it. Anyway. Daughters of Ursa Major. This is for you, Don. Also in Spanish, huh?
That's right.
There.
How's everything?
Nothing. Just have a few people over. PhD.
How's everything?
Nothing.
You just heard Pale Angels with Quiet Nowhere. Ahead of that was Mini Beast, Oxygen Thief. John Truby and the Ugly Janitors of America with Nude Sexuality in the Afternoon. Freestia, ahead of that with My First Robot, Black Bananas. Before that, Nightwalker. Before that was Windshield Smasher, the instrumental version by Black Moth, Super Rainbow. Terry Genderbender ahead of that with Shame, You're All I've Got, the slow version, and we start all off with Daughters of Ursa Major Kushlarm. Okay, you get the four track.
Yeah, I get the four track, and then it was just off to the races. Like, started layering stuff, put a couple little projects together here and there with like some guys I was playing with, my friend Grant Howard, who's a drummer, he was a big like Stuart Copeland freak, right? So just those real like kind of tight, kind of like reggae, kind of hip hop, sort of proto hip hop kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so we did some stuff together for a long time, and then that eventually turned into a little trio called the Convergence Ensemble. We did a little bit of recording here and there.
I don't know if you remember. True. It's a trio. Who's the third?
This cat, Manuel Rodriguez. Yeah, for sure. He was playing fretless bass.
Whoa.
And tearing it up,
like, man. Jocko kind of trip?
You know what? He's kind of on that. I mean, he was not a showy player at all, man. Just a real tasteful cat, you know. But that was still, I felt, you know, listening back to that kind of stuff, I kind of trip out on, like, how unsophisticated it is, right? Like, that it's just, it's like, I got an idea, like, you got an idea, let's put our ideas together.
Make it.
And just go. I do like that. I really like that kind of
angle.
Did
you guys start doing gigs?
Man, we rehearsed for months, because we were just, you know, going over and over these tunes, making them more complicated. And we did, like, one gig, right? And then what happened after that, right, classic. Right after that, I jumped into a group called Create with Orlando Greenhill on bass and Steve Richardson on drums. And we never practiced. We'd only talked about playing, and then we played a show. We never rehearsed. We played it out at, you remember the Hub out in Fullerton?
OC.
Yeah. So we just rolled out there.
Inland OC.
And then we just, yeah. And then we just.
To Disneyland.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Used to have that spot, the Reagan years, right there. It was like all the arcade games. So that was those are the extremes, right? Going from like rehearsing, playing one show, then never rehearsing and just saying, like, play. And then that's what I started doing for the next few years. Create, we just played hundreds of shows.
Yeah, you practiced at the gigs.
Totally. And we were just, you know, we were throwing stuff out there. But that was an amazing learning experience for me, because there's nothing like being in front of people, having no idea in your mind. Like, the clarity and the confusion are like battling it out, you know. So that was
the reality of the dealio.
That was school for me. I never went to school. Like, when I was in high school, when I was in high school, they were like, "Oh, you should go to Berkeley and all this stuff." And I was like, "That who's got money to do that?" You know? Like, I started thinking.
You know what I heard though? People say you go there to make connects.
For sure,
it's like almost like frats and colleges.
That makes sense.
It's after the school.
Yeah. But I was thinking, like, did Coltrane go to Berkeley? I don't think so. Like, did Monk go to Berkeley? I mean, these guys, they learned.
Coltrane's first recording is in the Navy.
Right, right. So I said, like, I'm just going to learn. I'll go to the School of Hard Knocks and just
learn.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
I mean, we're all learners. Sometimes a little more institutionalized than others.
Sure. I'm still learning.
So all them gigs was really...
It changed...
The education for Schlarm music.
Okay. Yeah.
That's incredible.
And it was amazing. That was how I really started to develop a kind of, I don't know, a little bit of like,
we're getting that
a personality.
Inner voice.
Yeah, that's right. You start to find your voice.
Well, we're at the end of the second hour, May 1st, 2013 edition of Watt Peter Show. People, please hold tight for hour three. May 1st, 2013's third hour, Watt for Pedro Show. Thank you.
Yeah. goes out to Pappy.
It goes out to Pappy.
Thank you.
Hot for Pedro, we started the third hour off with Spielgusher doing Enter My Thumb. Richard, not spieling. But Miss Shimmy, Miss Yuko, doing instrumental. Then Predag Delebesich with The Sun Will Be Behind My Back. Bob Lee with Fearless Leader and Brick Shit House after that. Dolphin Smile from Blue Coop. That's got Joe Bouchard from Boyz II Cult and Dennis Dunaway and Neil Smith from Alice Cooper.
Wow.
Yeah, get it? Blue Coop. Boyz II Cult, Alice Cooper. Yes.
I love it.
And then Pellet Gun with Bad Map Number 1. Blow Mud Sellout. Boy, that's got a great drummy man. Richie West.
Oh, yeah.
Buddy of Nails from the
sure.
Improv. Yeah. Rat King from Dead Reverend. After that, Corruption and Ideals from Cigotti, their new album. Pappy, which was done live on the air here on the show maybe a year ago, from Cochinas. And then finally, I got to do a bass solo here, courtesy of Mr. Chris, had me aboard. White Dove in the Psychic Temple. Thank you so much for let me play on that and be a part of it.
It
put me in the context. I mean, I was shitting PK log. I was so scared. So I wanted to do good for you. Yeah, thank you.
Dude, I feel like that tune, that there was just a pocket in there. Yeah. And, like, it's the same kind of thing. Like, I could hear you playing that tune. And what you ended up doing was, like, just, it was beyond what I honestly was like. I still listen to it. I mean, I'm still blown away by it. I mean, it's just, I just absolutely love that piece of music. And you were kind of, I think, if I remember right, you were the last cat on the whole record.
I know, because I was torn and stuff. And
no, but it was the bow. Okay. You know, it was the bow.
It was the bow.
It was the icing
on
top.
The one thin wafer. No, I couldn't have any more. Oh, yeah.
Just a thin mint.
That scene doesn't end. That just keeps going.
Yeah.
Okay. What was the name of these cats that you did all the gigs with?
Create. Yeah.
So, how'd that work out?
Yeah. So Create, man, we did. You know, we played and we did it. We actually did a this weird little like sextet record with Lynn Johnston playing sax and Chris Tyner playing trumpet, and then Ray Raposa from this group called Castanets playing guitar. And that was kind of the beginning of me starting to... I wrote a tune called Sonny Chirac for that record.
Wow.
And then that was the beginning of me starting to...
I got to meet him.
No.
I played one gig with him.
What?
Yeah, it was in Buffalo. He's a real nice man. Really nice.
Amazing.
Man. He can play like a motherfucker.
Dude, I
think he's uncredited on some Miles records.
I think so. I heard this funny anecdote about Miles calling him up and asking to borrow his amp. And then, like, Sonny said something like, Miles, you don't play guitar? And he just said, fuck you, and hung up. That was it. That was the whole conversation. Amazing. Amazing. Yeah,
I didn't read that in the Quincy Troop.
Yeah, right?
Autobiography.
That's an amazing book, though.
Oh, I like it.
Dude.
It's one of those. I got George Hurley to read two books on tour. That one,
yeah.
And... either Woodward or Bernstein did that Wired, something on Belushi.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are the two books. Well, I didn't have to get Georgie to read that, but he did that one. But I said, come on, you got to read this. Because it was just so trippy.
Yeah, man.
The way it's written, this life of music, even if he's bullshitting halfway.
Yeah. There was some really heartbreaking stuff in there, man. When he's
talking
about Homegirl in Paris that he fell in love with.
What about the two greatest disappointments in my life are my sons?
I know. Dude, that was heavy. It was heavy.
Me and Raymond met one of his sons. He's beautiful.
Dude.
He was at a photography thing of his pop.
Wow.
Now, Miles, I think, was a tripped out dude in a way.
For sure.
But still, he was a man. He knew, I think he knew he wasn't going to be Diz, but he knew how to put a band together, man.
Well, he tried to steal Lifetime from Tony Williams, right? He told Tony, like, oh, like, you guys just...
Tony was what? A little kid.
Dude.
When he first met him. But Tony turned him on to all that Archie Shepp and Ornette, and that's in the book.
Yep. Yeah, I love what he says about Tony.
Tony.
Dude, man.
Miles was kind of an appropriator.
Oh, for sure.
A little bit.
For sure.
But he was necessary. He's a great cat.
And for sure.
Went back and played with him twice, you know. So.
Yep.
So what evolved after Create, after the sextet?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it was a record called A Prospect of Freedom that we did, and I put that out on Sounds Are Active, and I was just doing.
No, people might not know this is Chris's label. When did this come about?
Oh, 99, I think. Okay. I started putting out records, and it was just a one man operation.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So the more records you put out, I put out like 50 albums, and like I put out a movie called 40 Bands, 80 Minutes with all these cats in it. And it got to the point where I was like, man, I'm not making music. I'm like pushing papers, and you know what I mean, and like filling out database spreadsheets and stuff. I'm like. So I had to make a choice to say, like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to put that stuff down, and I'm just going to focus on playing music. And and eventually, out of the Create stuff, I Heart Lung popped up.
Yeah.
And that was so... It kind of saved me in a way, because it was just me and Tom Steck.
Mm-hmm.
It was just guitar and drums. I didn't have to worry. Like, day one, we went on tour. It was just like, we were supposed to do a show... Show got canceled.
Yeah.
So we went to this place. You remember that place, Little Rock Rehearsal Studios? The show got canceled. We went to Little Rock. We recorded a record that night.
Damn.
So we're just like, well, shit. Like, what? We could do anything. A thing came up where it was like supporting this group, Wooden Wand and the Vanishing Voice, and then Castanets on tour. And it was like, well, can you guys do a 30-date tour? And I was like, well, yeah. It was just two of us. Like. There were no logistics.
Yeah.
It was like, Tom, can you do it? Yeah, I could do it. Totally Econo, right? Yeah. So we just went on tour. We did the whole U.S. That was the first time, this was 2006, that I'd been around the country doing that. Because, I got a family. I got two kids.
Sure.
You know, my daughter was born in 98. My son was born in 2001. So that was not a prospect where I was just like, I'm going to go gallivanting around. I mean, I got to take care of my family, you know.
Yeah.
But that opportunity came up, and I did that. And then when we came back, we started working on that Intra-Oceans record, and then we had Lynn play on it, and Nels played on it, Anthony Shattuck. And then, I'm really proud of that album. And then I feel like that kind of, I started producing stuff for other people and, doing some session stuff and helping other cats put records together and, still learning.
That's what life's about. I like that. That's the philosophy I'm trying to embrace, Chris. Here's something new from the Holland Tunnel Orchestra.
Thank you. best we can do without, because the first one up is the first to drop.
The first one down!
She cries, with the devil in her eyes. She moans, she sighs, with the torture of past lives. Well, if you want to stay alive, stay away from Satan's pride. She screams, to the demon of her dreams. She dies, right in front of your own eyes. Last call, now pick her off the fucking wall. Make make love be well. From her bedroom down in hell, her smile, her frown, you won't know if you're up or down. But then she plunges in the night. Well, stay away from Satan's cry. She dies, she dies, right in front of your own eyes. She soars, she soars. She's gone to hell and back for more. If you want to stay alive, well, stay away from Satan's pride. Satan's pride is legend. Well, that's what people say. Better not insult her, or there'll be hell to pay. Say your love will win out, Satan's pride decrees. But it's too late, she can't be saved from unholy matrimony. Oh yeah! Nightmare, nightmare. What's full of life, not nothing's there. Slow death, slow death. She'll suck your pride when nothing's left. All because she couldn't tell that Satan's pride can straight from hell. Well, all because you couldn't tell, yeah, the Satan's pride can straight from hell.
Show. Yeah, Holland Tunnel Orchestra with New Life. After that was Permanent Marker, something live called Marmorous. Then we had Crema from Giovanni Adopogin and Greg Turner, who used to play guitar for Angry Samoans with Satan's Bride. He teaches calculus in the college in near Santa Fe.
That makes sense.
Mexico, yeah. You know, same guy wrote it, you know, they saved Hitler's cock. Right? Okay, Fragment from Fruit. I think that was done in Long Beach. Bricklayer, something live from old Husker Du. Or something old from Husker Du, that's what I should say. And then finally, Crazy Women Drivers with Infested With Your Love. I think that's Long Beach, too. So, you really ain't... You can't do the tour thing so much. So you're thinking about more about playing in the studio, helping people out, production, putting out things.
Yep. Yeah, and then little by little, it's like, you know, I'll go out on the road like maybe once a year now.
Okay.
And I'll go out for like a week or two.
But not Whalers, yeah.
Man, when I was gone for a month, I thought, I came back and I felt like my kids were like different.
Right.
Like they grew and they had all these experiences.
My pop was a sailor.
Yeah.
I hardly saw him as a boy at all.
Yeah.
So it's one of the reasons why I never had kids, because of this life it is. And I understand. I'm glad you... You're sensitive to that, and not just so much about, you know, El Solo Mio.
No, man.
You know, so you're thinking about that's great that they get to grow up with pop.
So now I'll go out maybe for like a week or two in the summertime. Because it's like they got time, they got activities.
Yeah.
Dad gets to do his thing, and, you know. Because there is a certain amount of, like, wanderlust. You know, Joni Mitchell used to talk about that all the time, and, like, the refuge of the road, and... I don't have that. I love my home. You know, I love my family. So
yeah, but there's something about.
But there is.
You know, I mean, I think it'll help you appreciate a little bit home even more.
That's right.
Now, maybe not the Don Quixote thing. You got to go at the windmills, but maybe a little bit. But you roam, you roost. Everybody's got to find their own balance to it. It's good, I think, to get some firsthand experience about out of your town, but a commitment to your place, that's very important.
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially a family. And your kids, which are the next shift.
Yeah, man. And they're already, I mean, my daughter's playing. Yeah. My daughter's, we bought a piano.
Yeah.
And we bought an organ over here at Cheap. You know Cheap?
Yeah.
Over off of, was it Gaffey?
Yeah.
I went in there with the family, and they had a old Hammond 122, an L-122 with Tony Banks from Genesis used to play. And, like, it didn't work. It was all jacked up. My son turned it on, and we... Fixed it up. We bought it. Took it home. Daughter, this was over the summer, this last summer. My daughter come home every day from summer school, Beatles tunes, right? She's like, how do you play a major seventh? I was like, well, we got her a chart, chord chart. She's sitting there. She's like, well, what's this? I don't know what's a nine. What's this nine chord? I was like, all right, well, let's figure this stuff out.
Curiosity is the best thing.
Yeah. So she started doing that. But it's like, you know, they're always learning, teaching them. I end up learning more.
That's right. That's an old thing. Look, if somebody asks you to give some kind of advice.
Yeah.
And looking back on your music journey, what would you say?
Man, I don't know. I think I just, my kind of mantra has just been about just learning. You know, that's all I want to do.
Advice you would tell a young person getting into music.
Yeah, don't stop. Don't stop learning. Don't stop teaching yourself. I mean, like, even just this last year, I went out and I took a lesson with Carol Kay.
Badass bassist.
Dude, she was intense.
Oceanside or something.
Yeah, she was like way out, like Newhall.
Newhall, right.
So I went out there and, I mean, you know, because she had this kind of, she's got this thing where, you know, she was a jazz guitarist. Not a bass player.
No, she
right.
Over.
So she was. She has this thing where it's like, man, I know more than what I got to show on a lot of these records. And so I just went to her, and she's like, "Well, what do you know? What do you want to learn?" And I said, "Treat me like I don't know anything. Start me from the beginning." So, and I've been playing guitar for like 20 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think like that, you know, that desire to learn, and then also like that humility, right? Like to just. Take me back to square one.
Yeah.
Like every day, I should be able to like start back over again and just say, "Hey, look, I know. Yeah, I put out all these records or I played with all these people.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean anything. Today we're doing a new thing."
Beautiful, really beautiful. Thanks for being on the show, Chris.
Dude, thank you,
man. Keep bringing the music. I want to keep playing on the show.
Okay.
Good luck and with the family learning. Get your little Jerry Lee Lewis.
Yeah.
It's been May 1st, 2013 edition of Watt for Pedro Show, people. Happy May Day. Keep your powder dry.